Chapter 38 Introductions.
I swear I told you all about it, Brannis protested.
He held his hands up as if to ward off thrown cutlery. Soria still sat across from him at the same table they had occupied since first settling there to deal with Faolin's emergency summons.
No. No, you missed mentioning that there was a shielding spell for the entire deck of the ship. I spent hours in the rain, soaked through to my...
Soria began, but she must have noticed that her voice was rising. She caught herself and continued as a harsh whisper.
Soaked through to my nether garments.
You forgot, Brannis insisted.
I am sure I told you. You know, Erend, a sensible man learns to lose this argument, admit he was wrong, and move on.
Somewhere above Vaedrus, the two of them were sleeping in shared quarters on board the Daggerstrike. As captain, Juliana had her own, and as commander of all Cadran military forces, no one objected when Kyrus joined her. Still shaken from her close encounter with the Magrin military, and being dragged bodily from her own ship, Juliana had been rather more forgiving of her earlier discomforts than Soria seemed to be.
I suppose sensible men are liars, then. I would admit it if I did not remember telling you about the shield, Brannis said,
smiling to diffuse the rising anger Soria was showing. Soria muttered something under her breath in Keshi as she turned her head to look anywhere but at Brannis.
What was that? He asked.
Brannis had some guesses, but none were flattering. It was his curse that he felt compelled to ask anyway.
Nothing. Just a little mantra they made us recite at the temple. It's supposed to be calming, but I don't know if it's working.
Maybe when we are done in Acardia, we can visit Kesh. You can show me where you grew up.
Maybe.
Soria did not sound enthusiastic, so Brannis did not press the issue. Soria looked down and began fishing about in her coin purse, the metallic clattering drawing the attention of the proprietor. Brannis felt a pang of guilt, since they had been occupying a corner table of his establishment for hours. Soria assuaged that guilt easily enough with a pile of Ekel coins, whose value was difficult to count, spilled haphazardly across the table. But there was at least 10 times what they owed for their meal.
Let's go, Soria said, standing up. We had a day planned.
Gruder's Pastries was closed for the day when they arrived. Their interworld distraction had delayed them until mid-afternoon, while Gruder closed up shop shortly after noontime. The handle of the door jiggled a little when Brannis gave it a pull, but it held fast.
We can try again tomorrow, Soria suggested. I cannot imagine that such a problem will come up twice in 2 days.
No, I think he's still in there. Follow me, Brannis said.
He walked around the building, down a narrow space between the bakery and the silversmith who owned the shop next door, and around to the back of the building. There was another door there in the alleyway. Brannis knocked.
We are closed this side as well, sir, Gruder's familiar voice called out from inside. Come back in the morn.
Brannis knocked again.
Still closed.
Brannis knocked a third time. He heard footsteps from inside the bakery. There was a noise of some bar being drawn. The door swung open.
Now listen here, Gruder began, but stopped, mouth agape.
Can we come in? Brannis asked.
Gruder nodded, stepping aside to allow Brannis and Soria to get by him.
Kyrus, what are you doing here? Gruder asked,
once he had herded them inside and secured the door once more. The back of the bakery was packed with shelves full of ingredients and tables for mixing, rolling, and kneading. Dominating the whole of it, though, was the large stone oven, from whence came spiced crescents. Alas, the oven was cold, and Gruder had been cleaning up after the day's work when Brannis's knocking had interrupted him.
Well, first off, do not call me Kyrus. I am going by the name Sir Aaron Hinterdale, and I came from Marker's Point. I figured I could not ignore the resemblance to a certain fugitive, but I can explain it as a distant relation. As for why I am here, I wanted to see how you had been faring in my absence.
Well, spiced crescents do not sell like they once did, but otherwise I have fared well enough. You seem unusually hale and hearty,
though I imagine a suit of armor can hide a lot," Gruder said with a wink. "Are you going to introduce me?"
"Soria Hinterdale." Soria stepped in and introduced herself. Brennus cringed, remembering the talks that Kyrus had with Gruder about Abelay. He also noticed that she was playing up her Keshi accent.
"Another distant relation?" Gruder ventured a guess.
Brennus relaxed a bit as Gruder did not attempt to make the more obvious. "Wife," Soria replied, tossing Brennus's hopes of avoiding an awkward conversation right overboard.
"Congratulations!" Gruder cried out, beaming.
"Kyrus, you've done well for yourself. Picked a real beauty."
"Well, this is all sort of unofficial. Yes, as fugitives, Kyrus and I have not had the chance to have a proper ceremony," Soria clarified.
"Well, of course, I can understand that, certainly. My congratulations to the both of you, though, in the hope that you can settle down somewhere nice, where you can leave your troubles here behind you."
"I think once I have seen to some business here in Acardia, we will take ourselves off to Kesh. Soria is Acardian, but she traveled down there with her family as a young girl and was raised there," Brennus said. It seemed better to tell Gruder their actual plans and let the information be known, rather than spend a few seconds coming up with a lie and having Soria beat him to the storytelling. Brennus itched to ask about Abelay, but Soria seemed intent on thwarting his efforts, making sure Gruder knew that he was hers. Gruder also seemed complicit, even though it was out of politeness in his case, not mentioning Kyrus's sweetheart in front of Soria. They talked a long while, snacking on tarts that were left over from the day's sales. Kyrus heard bits and pieces of the aftermath of his escape, and the reemergence of Denric Zane as the scourge of the Katamic once more. Brennus filled Gruder in on the missing portion of Kyrus's story, leaving out the more fantastical ones, like the explosion on Marker's Point. They left the bakery by early evening, taking the back way again. Soria left Gruder with a trade bar for use in any emergency that might come up due to their meeting. It was a cryptic warning, but Brennus knew that if his suspicions about a conspiracy were right, there might be bystanders who got pulled into it as well. "It ought to be time to find ourselves dinner, but I stuffed myself with enough blackberry tarts to last me the night," Soria commented as she strolled down the wide cobblestone avenues of Scar Harbor alongside Brennus.
"I could have done with a spiced crescent to see if they were all that Kyrus made them out to be. We ought to go back before we leave the city."
Errand, you have to know that isn't a good idea. I know all this feels like a homecoming lark, but you are the one who thinks that something nefarious is going on here. Anyone you talk to is endangered, if only a little, just by speaking to you," Soria told him.
"Yes, I know why you gave Gruder a whole trade bar, just for interrupting his daily cleaning of the bakery. He might need to flee Scar Harbor if people start coming after him to get leverage over me."
Soria wrapped herself around Brennus's arm as they walked, squeezing it in lieu of a full hug. "At least you understand that much. I was getting worried that I would have to do all the underhanded thinking for both of us."
"Well, I'm still not comfortable with calling myself Sir Errand. Impersonating a knight is an actual crime in Acardia."
"You are not impersonating a knight. There is no Errand Hinterdale to take offense. We made him up," Soria said cheerfully, smiling up at Brennus. She seemed to be enjoying playing at being the knight's lady. Soria was such a warrior all the time, from what he had gathered from Varnus and Tanner. How much does she envy Juliana her life of parties, fashions, and idleness? Juliana certainly seemed hungry for a taste of the warrior life.
"Yes, but I am not a knight at all. Whether I take the name of a real knight or just make one up, it is still just as criminal."
"I am sorry, Sir Brennus Soloran, but I seem to rather strongly recollect that you are a knight. The ones around here are hereditary knights and bootlicks who get the title handed to them for meritorious distinction and such nonsense. If anything, they're the ones impersonating knights, not you." In the small hours of the morning, shortly before dawn, a small crowd still occupied one of the innumerable portside taverns along Cadrus's waterfront,
Work in the port continued round the clock, though it ebbed and flowed, slowest in the wee hours, but never quite stopping. The taverns mirrored the pattern, with one or more always open, come sun or moon. Tanner awoke to the sound of monohorns thundering across the table in front of him. The huge, savage beasts had already trampled his head flat and were proceeding to run in loops just to vex him. Three empty bottles lay on the table in front of him, but with effort, they turned into just a single bottle, lying on its side. A leftover splash of whiskey pooled shallow within. He started trying to trace back his evening. He had been kidnapped by a worried Varness, forced at drink point to listen to a convoluted tale about messages being ferried every which way from Vaedrus to Tellurac and back. The burly old guard captain had matched him drink for drink, but Tanner had never had the head for it that Zelisan did, and that went for Varness as well. "I was beginning to think I would have to find you another time," a voice called in his direction. It sounded familiar, but he could not place it. He raised his head from where it had laid, pressed flat against the wood grain of the table. For how long, he could not tell. The side of his face was sore, and a line of drool clung to the corner of his mouth. He wiped it away with his sleeve as he looked for the one who had addressed him. Tanner blinked in confusion when he saw Captain Stalyart walking over from a nearby table to join him. It was the same man, there was no mistaking him. The bronzed skin, dark hair, the amused expression permanently carved into the features of his face. There could never be two such as him, except as twin-born. "Just to be on the safe side here, where are we?" Tanner asked, wincing and putting a hand to his eyes to shield them from the lantern light. "Cadrus," Stalyart's twin replied. "You are not imagining. Like you, I try to keep myself easy to remember. I do not play at games of disguises and layer upon layer of selves." "So what's your name here, then?" Tanner asked. Perhaps some other time I will tell you, once I know you can be trusted with it. For now, I will enter to Stalyart if you call me such," Stalyart's twin said, pulling up a chair with a shrieking noise of wood scraping against wood that made Tanner's head resonate like a struck chime. Stalyart sighed, plunking down a bottle on the table that looked like a more reputable version of his own. Stalyart's had a cork in it, appeared to be full, and had not lain for the better part of the night in a pool of spilt liquor and drool. "The cure that sickens." Stalyart pulled the cork and offered it to Tanner, then took a seat, straddling the chair with his arms propped up on the back. Tanner gave the bottle a skeptical look for just long enough to realize that looking hard at anything hurt. He sat up, slouched back in his chair, eyes half closed to ward away the worst of the light. He took a long pull at the bottle, tasting nothing but the welcome burning sensation as he swallowed. "So you're here," Tanner observed, once he had a few swallows to stop the worst of his pains. "So I am." "Why?"
"Ah, so now you are awake. Excellent. Yes, why is a very good question," Stalyart's twin said. "You see, I am a cautious man. One may not think it from the occupations I choose, but given that each man must work, I am cautious when you consider all things."
"Well, that clears that up," Tanner replied.
"Clear as—" "Yes, yes, something not very clear at all. Your wits are, regrettably, a lost cause this morning. Please listen, though, because I come on behalf of a friend. There may come a time when we too might stop a war."
"Oh, you some hot-as-hobnails sorcerer around here? You got the ear of those Magrin bastards and their high council?" Tanner asked, overplaying his sarcasm to the point of self-mockery.
"No, but consider this. Brannis and Counselor Jinzan Fair are both relying on you to relay messages," Stalyart said, talking as if to a young child, slowly and clearly.
"Yep, that's me, message boy to the twin-born and the powerful."
"Ah, but consider that they have only your memory to rely on, not wax seals and warded parchments. You not only carry each message, held open in your hands, but you must read it, remember and recite it."
"Oh yeah, I'm a talented guy," A regular talking parrot. Have you considered that perhaps, with a bit of help, those messages could be rewritten? Perhaps a few words here and there, Stalyard's twin suggested.
And do what?
Bring two sides closer together. Arrange a truce before we are all consumed by the war.
Brannis had hated the idea the moment he thought of it, Soria knew, yet he suggested it anyway.
I am sure he had dreamed of some sweet little reunion, but he's gotten smarter than that. He might still have his chance to talk to the peasant girl, but not until I have made certain she is safe.
The trust Brannis showed in her was more valuable than all the coin in the purse she had left behind in their room, the caches she had hidden across Tellurac, and everything that House Archon owned. Soria skulked along the streets of Scar Harbor, clad once more in the dark, hooded ensemble. Even though there was nothing unsavory about being out late at night, and Scar Harbor was likely safe enough for an unescorted young lady who was not a trained Tezuan warrior, she preferred to remain unseen. Whoever might be involved in Kyrus's conspiracy, and somehow she thought that it was Kyrus at work here, not Brannis, she wanted to give them as little knowledge about her and Brannis as possible. The fact that she was starting to see differences between Brannis and Kyrus, beyond the obvious physical differences, was irksome to her. Soria remembered the way to the peasant girl's studio, which doubled as her home. The route she took to get there avoided the lamp-lit main thoroughfares and took her through alleys and over estate walls. She envied Faolin's illusions right then, since she could have made the trip in half the time, a tenth the effort, and with no chance of being seen, had she the ability to turn invisible. There was a light in one of the upper-story windows. It was faint, orange, small. It had to have been a single candle. A few fools were reckless enough and scared enough of the dark to keep a lit candle by the bedside, but the peasant girl did not seem to be the type. Tooth-rotting saccharine optimism did not fit with being frightened of the dark of one's own bedchamber.
It does not fit with being Celia Mistfield either, Soria thought bitterly. Was it even possible for nascent twin-born to be so different in demeanor?
Soria could not conceive of it. She and Juliana had been joined for so long that the line between them was not but a smudge. Kyrus and Brannis had been aware of one another for a few months, but aside from superficial traits, they were mostly the same. A scholar with the heart of a hero, stubbornly naive, too clever to twist except by womanly charms. She smiled, knowing that hers were the charms that worked best on him, or rather that hers and Juliana's worked best on them. Sourly, she reminded herself that they were not the only charms that worked at all. It was time to meet Abelay Tillman once again, this time knowing that she was Celia on the other side. Soria edged her way up the side of the studio, finding a few handholds, and making them work for the whole of the climb. Her long limbs and strong fingers made it easy work. Once she reached and took hold of the sill, it was child's play. A quick check of the ether showed a single source inside, lying down. She pulled herself up to see inside in the light. There were two bedrolls laid out on the floor, not even proper beds with posts and a frame. One was vacant, the other held a sleeper, camped near the candle. Possibly awake, possibly asleep. With great care to remain silent, Soria edged her grip on the sill until she could push herself through the window. She was glad that the night was warm enough that the window had been left open.
Creak!
Her undoing was the old woodwork. Thin as she was, Soria's weight was plenty to set the sill to creaking. The sleeper rolled over, startled by the noise. Soria took no time to think, but vaulted into the room, rushing to prevent a cry of alarm. Soria's hand clamped over a mouth. Even through her gloves, she knew it was not the peasant girl. The sleeper had been male, with a wide jaw and a nose bigger than Celia's, for certain. Soria conjured a tiny light, counting on her mask to hide her identity, and reveal that of the man she had just assaulted. Boy. Soria corrected herself immediately on seeing the youthful features.
He had unwrinkled skin marked with reddish blemishes and a paltry scruff of beard that reminded her of Iridan. His hands came up to fend her off, and she quickly realized that, boy or not, he was nearly full-grown and physically stronger than her. Soria changed tactics. While she could not manage illusions like Phelan, there were a few tricks that came close. She let her light spell end and conjured two soft red lights, locating them on her own eyes. It made it dreadfully hard to see, so she let her vision switch to the ether. Of course, aside from the scant candlelight, all the boy would see would be the illumination of two red eyes.
"Don't kill me! Don't kill me! Please don't kill me! I'll have the money soon, I swear!"
the boy said as soon as he was able to push Soria's hand free of his face.
"Your name,"
Soria said, making her voice as gravelly as she could. It was difficult sounding intimidating with a naturally high voice. She kept her words to a minimum.
Neelan.
"Where's Abile?"
"I ain't telling you where my sister's at."
"Stupid boy," Soria said. "I'm not going to hurt her." "You? Maybe."
"Well, you can't get her anyway," Neelan said. "Thomas Harwick's courting her now. You give her trouble, you'll deal with him and Lord Harwick. Even you lot ain't for having that kind of trouble as what they can make for you."
"How long?"
"How long what?"
Neelan asked, starting to get the impression he was not the object of the red-eyed shadowy figure who had invaded his home.
"Courting her for how long?" "Months? I don't know. She barely comes home at all most nights. They done made up a room for her at the Lord's estate. Just leave her alone, all right? Even if she's got a lord to protect her now, don't mean I can't look after her too, right?"
"She loves him?"
"How would I know? Yeah, sure, I guess. She thinks he's gonna marry her."
Soria gave Neelan a shove. As she turned, all the lights went out. Two red, one orangish candle glow.
In a ruffle of cloaks and a few quick, quiet footsteps, she vanished out the window.